I'm gonna research her about money, because money is a big thing right now in my life, since I'm newlywed, trying to stretch it, and trying not to covet other people's money, and trying not to think woe is me for not having more money, because it's hard. I'm sure you've all been there. Okay, so I'm
going to
begin.
No. However, some of the best lessons you'll ever learn in your life are happening right now.
I know. It's true. And these scriptures help to remind me that, to remind me to focus on other things, so I get more joy out of other things, and to trust God more. Okay, so I'm going to be jumping around. You can follow. I don't have my passages ready, so I'm going to take just as long as you to turn to the pages. Okay, Matthew 6. Okay. 19-21. Okay. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And then Job 1:20-21.
What was the scripture again?
Job 1:20-21. After everything's been taken away from Job, and he says, then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshipped. He said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Ecclesiastes 5. Verse 10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with his income. This too is vanity. Jump down to 15. As he had come naked from his mother's womb, so will he return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. Then we're going to jump all the way to 1 Timothy 6. We have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. Verse 10, for the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And then 17-19 of the same chapter. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. In Ephesians 4:28, he who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with one who has need. Acts 4:34. For there was not a needy person among them, for all who were owners of land or houses would sell them and bring the proceeds of the sales and lay them at the apostles' feet, and they would be distributed to each as any had need. Hebrews 13:5. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. Psalms 37:16-17. Better is the little of the righteous than the abundance of many wicked, for the arms of the wicked will be broken, but the Lord sustains the righteous. Proverbs 16:8. Better is a little with righteousness than great income with injustice. And back at chapter 15:16-17. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred. Philippians 4. Philippians 4:11-13. Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And finally, Proverbs 30:8-9. Proverbs 30:8-9. Keep deception and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is my portion, that I not be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or that I not be in want and steal and profane the name of my God. So those are all the scriptures I picked out because they help me to keep the right perspective about money right now, especially that last one. I think it kind of sums it all up, because there's so many times I stop and I think, you know what? Me and Mondo probably have just the right amount of money, because God probably knows we can't get by with much less, but he probably knows we're not mature enough yet to handle more. So it helps me a little bit.
Thank you, Emily. I think there are so many lessons to be learned about money, and maybe we'll expand some of that. And because attitudes is one, and then actually handling money to be the kind of keeper of the home we should be.
But first of all, don't you think we all ought to congratulate Emily?
Yes.
Yay! We're so proud of you. And, you know, it took so much courage on your part that first time. But then it made it a little easier this time, didn't it? Yeah, and cry this time. So it must be easier.
It was kind of a bad time.
It was, I know.
Time last year.
So we're very proud of you and appreciate your being here with us and doing these things. But one question about that, you know, that first scripture you read says, don't store up money. Is that really the end of it? Don't store up money? Because the other scriptures tell us, if you do, then you have opportunities to help other people. You have, and so it's about attitude, and it's about what you want to do with the money. And I know everyone in here has had at one point or another a chance to help someone else. And that's so much more, it's more elating, I don't know a good word, than spending it on myself.
Well, blessed to be with that voice.
It absolutely is, and you can feel it. You can feel those blessings. So, excellent introduction. Thank you very much.
I know we're not, this is not our lesson.
That's all right. Everything's our lesson, Rita. Yeah.
But at this age, you worry about or I say you worry, you think about your children having to take care of you. So we do try to store money. And is that wrong?
Well, I don't think so, because we're told to care for our own households or we're worse than an infidel. So if what we're doing is planning so that our children aren't burdened with, well, that's supposed to be hands that didn't show up very well. Hands in a pinky swear.
Was that the rich young ruler that said, I will tear down my barns and then dig
the And if we could use that money, I mean, if somebody were in need, you would be able to use right. that money to help right. them.
But if you don't store up something, then you will burden it
to someone else.
Yeah,
there's a barrel there.
I think it's more about attitude than about anything else, because if we've stored up money and we have an abundance, maybe for the first time in our lives, then are we handling that the way we should? Are we going, oh boy, I'm going to tear down the barns and build more so I can keep more money? Are we thanking God for being so blessed that we have this abundance and using it to help others? I saw a Facebook thing. I don't buy lottery tickets. I've never bought a lottery ticket in my life. I don't think should buy lottery tickets. However, this little blurb was a guy walked up to a homeless man on the street, and he said, man, I don't have any money to give you, but you can have this ticket. I bought a lottery ticket, and you can have it. We'll go cash it. We went and cashed it. It was worth $1,000. Well, the homeless man obviously felt like he was, you know, that was it. He was gone. And the man turned around and said, no, I want to share it with you. And he kept, they handed it out in $100 bills, and he kept, two of them and gave the rest to this guy. Because it leads us into our lesson. He had made a promise. It said, here, you can have this. Now, for most people, that's going to be kind of hard to keep that promise. Here's $1,000, and I'm going to give it to this person I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with it. I don't know if they're going to go drink it up or whatever. But he had made a promise, and he kept the promise. I was pretty impressed by that. So, and probably money feeds into this topic as well as anything. Because certainly, I get very tired of the world saying, money is the root of all evil. Big businesses have money, it's the root of all evil. Money is not the root of all evil, as we all know. The love of money can be the root of all forms of evil. It is. It doesn't even say
the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil.
All kinds of evil.
Inflation.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean every evil comes from the love of money, but it certainly means there are lots of them. And I can think, you know, right away, greed, jealousy, envy, strife. You know, you can just list things that money gets in the way of. But I was serious about something I said, that some of the best lessons you'll ever learn are learned now, where you don't have a choice but to be frugal. And you develop that attitude of frugality, of being a good steward of God's blessings, and it should play over into the rest of your life. I think we fail sometimes in imparting that information to our children as well as we should, particularly in a world of such abundance. And we do have such abundance. And even the things that we own anymore are not designed to be fixed. So it's harder even to teach that trait of holding on to something, because if you have a computer chip and it dies, it's done. You can't fix it. You throw it away. And so the kids grow up with this whole attitude of just get rid of it, which I personally think plays over into personal relationships. You know, it's hard. Let's just get rid of it. Anyway, enough of my little sermonizing. I have redone this lesson. Thank you, Yvonne, for all the extra scripture that you gave me, and I was able to add into it. But I can't remember. I added them all after where we talked last week, and at the time that I started adding them, I knew where that was. But now I don't. Anybody know what slide we finished on?
What, last week?
Well, no, two. Several. 2 weeks at least.
We were to start on that Job 31:6.
Yes.
It was the last page.
But yes,
yeah,
now
third
we have
page
what
I have.
Okay. Well, I think I've changed it enough that that doesn't help a lot. So let's go to page. Let's go to page.
There's a 31:6 on page 2. Job 31:6.
Yeah, but I think let's start with God helps people with integrity, and that's at the top of page 3 of the handout. And we may repeat a few, but I never worry too much about repeating some scripture. I think that's probably a good thing. God helps those with integrity. We're told that He'll be with us, that He'll help us. In Psalms 41 and Psalm 7, we're staying in Psalms for a little bit. As for me, the psalmist says, you uphold me in my integrity and set me before your face forever. If I have integrity, you're with me, Lord. You're going to help me, and I'm going to be with your face on me. What could be better motivation than that? Pull this thing down so I'm not trying to look at Carol over the top of it. So, when integrity has put us in a position where the world has given us trouble, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit, what's our motivation? To stay. God's with us. He's helping us. My defense is of God, who saves the upright in heart. Is He going to save us from all physical persecution? From death, even? No, but He is going to save us. And I believe that in many circumstances, He'll help us physically in this world, but not always. So how does integrity protect us? Well, in Psalms it says, let integrity and uprightness preserve me, for I wait for you. Just doing the right thing. You know, Keith Rowland's a friend of mine, and he used to say that, he's a doctor, he used to say that in the emergency room, there were a whole lot of people he found there that if they had just been doing what they were supposed to do, they wouldn't be in the emergency room. He said it's amazing the number of stab wounds that would never have happened if people hadn't been in situations where they shouldn't have been in the first place. So even in a physical world, integrity can protect us. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He's a shield to those who walk uprightly and guards the paths of justice, preserves the way of His saints. What a comforting scripture. What a comforting scripture. He guards the paths of justice and preserves the way of His saints. Not always going to be protected. I mean, a Christian could be wrongfully accused of a crime and be convicted. The justice system doesn't always work. But God is guarding the path. I mean, how many times did Paul wind up in prison? So we know that's a possibility. That doesn't mean He's left us. And integrity protects us. He walks with integrity, walks securely. I like this last part. He who perverts his ways will become known. He can hide out for a while, but sooner or later, we've all heard the, you know, truth will out. Sooner or later, the truth will surface and people will know. God always knows, but people will know. The integrity of the upright will guide them, but the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy them. What about that person that's been just rolling on the top of it forever and ever and ever? You know, I can think of a case a long, long time ago that some of y'all who are old enough will know. Estes, Billy Saul Estes, member of the church, did a financial pyramid scheme, basically. Lost a lot of people's money, wound up in jail. And he just got out not very long ago, three or four years ago. Made big, big headlines because he had been one of the wealthiest oil and cattlemen in Texas. Came out of Abilene. And, of course, it made big headlines that he was a member of the Church of Christ. That was all over everything, too, sadly. But he looked like a man of integrity. He acted like it. The world thought of it. They gave him money, you know, to invest. But he was perverse, and it destroyed him. God didn't destroy him. His own willfulness and greed destroyed him. Righteousness guards him whose way is blameless, but wickedness overthrows the sinner. Same things. You know, we only need one scripture ever to operate from, but it's always helpful when there's about 12 of them that say the same thing. No repetition. Here, pay attention. This is what I'm telling you. If you're upright and you have integrity, I'll be with you and your path will be good. But if you're not, wickedness overthrows the sinner. Mark the blameless man and observe the upright, for the future of that man is peace. I just did a workshop for a friend of mine on peaceful interactions in an early childhood classroom and the difference that environment makes for young children in creating a peaceful classroom. Well, that's what he's saying here. Look at the blameless man. Observe the upright man. See how they live. See what their environment is like. See what their actions are like. And the future of that man is peace. And we're talking in the workshop about kids, how you can set the environment to get rid of a whole lot of issues. How you can set a tone that gets rid of a lot of issues. So as we're saying, pay attention. See what works. And model yourself to the extent that we model after people. After that man, see what he does. If you know someone, let's say you have a problem with a quick temper, as I have been known to have. If you can watch someone who appears calm, their life appears calm and peaceful, and learn from them, then a wise man will do that. It's the unwise, the foolish, who say, I can figure this out by myself. Really? Because how well is that working for you so far, according to Dr. Phil's words? How's that working? So if we know we have an issue, why can't we find that Christian person who has overcome that issue and model ourselves after them? And the other thing I think we need to remember is that what we see is often the result of years of work. We tend to think, well, so-and-so never gets upset. It must be very easy for them. It's much harder for me. Well, how do you know that? How do you know that that person hasn't for years been struggling and has worked and prayed and changed to overcome whatever that is? I think Mary Dean's the most calm person I've ever met in my life. No. But she has told me things over the years that let me know that she's worked to come to that. But now, come on, don't y'all believe me? You see Mary and she's calm and peaceful. But what I'm saying is sometimes we want to excuse ourselves by saying, well, it's easy for them. Well, you don't know if it's easy for them or not. You haven't ever asked that question. And if we are righteous in our living, we're trying to make it appear that it's easy for us. We're working on it. So I think we assume things sometimes that we should not. People have demons. For all we know, someone sitting by us at one point in their life had trouble with alcohol, and it's still a temptation for them. We wouldn't know it by their lives because they've worked and overcome it. I'm just saying we shouldn't excuse ourselves by saying, well, it's easy for Pat to do whatever. It's easy for Debbie.
And it's going to be, if you have something like that that's hard for you, which we all have our thorns on our side, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So the calm person may have something else.
Right. Another issue that they're dealing with.
It's going to be a lifelong thing. It's not going to be a quick fix. If you have something like that that's just part of your personality, you're going to have to work on it probably for the rest of your life.
And once you get too comfortable and say, I've got that fixed, it's when you're in trouble again. That's when Satan goes, uh-huh.
And that's one thing to realize, that I'm like this, and when it's happening.
Right.
You know, when it starts to happen, you need to stop and say, okay, this is happening again. And
I need to close that door for Satan, because he's looking. He's waiting for that opportunity to come back in. And I do, we've talked about this before, but I do think as Christians and sisters in Christ, we need to work on our own attitude of not blaming. If someone comes to us with a problem, we need to work on our hearts and not say, well, that's pretty silly thing to cause a problem for you, because it didn't cause a problem for me. We need to be more accepting of people as human beings and say, I'm here to help you. What can I do?
Jean, I think we take, I know one of my problems is taking things too personal, and that causes words and strife that don't need to be there because I took it too personal.
Right.
And I have to work.
Should all grow up with Tippy. Because when I was a kid and used to be, you know, I can't go out because blah, 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 she'd say, they're not all looking at you. And it is good to learn that everything is not, that you shouldn't take it all personally. And I do have some friends that take almost every statement very personally, and you feel like you're on a tightrope all the time. Because, you know, I didn't mean it that way. I wasn't trying to hurt your feelings. a generalized statement. So, yeah, we all have things we have to work on in ourselves. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous. Shout for joy, all you upright in heart. When it's hard, we need to remember this. We have the joy of Christ. We have the joy of salvation. And no matter what happens here, we can rejoice in being upright. Kids in school.
If nothing is ever hard for you, you don't grow.
That's
true. You're just on a level and you don't have to...
You don't have to struggle.
Struggle, then you're going to stay where you are.
That's like I've been telling Kate with Micah. She says, he's not trying to get two things. I said, put it this far away from him, where he has to work real hard at it. I said, when he cries, that just means he's frustrated and trying to figure out how to get to it. He needs that growth. Don't put everything up where he can reach it. He needs to learn. But you're right. If it's never hard, then we don't grow, because why should we? We're just right here, and it's easy. And a prayer for God's grace and God's help. Do good, O Lord, to those who are good and to those who are upright in their hearts. A prayer for help. I mean, haven't you? Maybe none of you have. I know there have been times that my prayer has been, but I've been so good. I need your help. Why is this happening to me? Why me? You know, that's a real human attitude. And of course the answer is, why not? But it's okay to pray for help to be upright. We're given examples of that. It's all right to say, I don't have this all handled, Lord. I need your help in staying on this path.
I've always taught my kids, pray for, if nothing else, pray for wisdom from God.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I pray for that every day.
And as we get older, I think we realize more and more the need for that.
Yes.
Righteousness guards him whose way is blameless, but wickedness overthrows the sinner. And this, I think, is a really good tie here. Yes, it guards us with God's help. Once we get to the point of thinking that we're doing this on our own, wickedness overthrows the sinner, the arrogant, those who think they don't need God's help.
I think pride goes so much hand in hand with integrity.
I do too.
The antithesis, is that what that
yes.
Stan's favorite word?
That's a good word. Antithesis. Better is the poor, Emily, who walks in his integrity, than one perverse in his ways, though he be rich. I don't know a whole lot of rich people, you know, very wealthy in this world. But Randy has that CPA firm, and we did do books for a lot of very wealthy people. And I'll tell you right now, they worry about money just as much as you or I worry about money. It's all relative. It is all relative. We had one client who, and this is 30 years ago maybe, so think about inflation rates and all that, who had enough money in CDs, just sitting over in CDs, had over $1 million in CDs, which meant his interest from CDs, because they actually paid interest back then, was quite substantial. And when he'd owe tax of, you know, $450,000 or whatever, I'm just making that number up, he was calm because he had it, but he worried about his books when he brought them in every month, you know, and he went over them. And the people who had almost no money are worrying on the same level that he worried. So it didn't matter if they were making $20,000 a year or $3 million. The anxiety, if you let yourself be anxious about money, is at the same level.
Heard it said that the person that is rich is sometimes considered anyone that has more than we do.
Yeah, that's just like the
very relevant.
People who are old or 15 years older than me. Yeah. Pretty soon that rule won't hold up very well, but
no,
right now. But it is, it's relative. Money is very, very relative. When you start looking at inflation rates and things, Mother, how much did Daddy make a week when y'all first moved here?
130
something.
No, that one a week.
It was a month, wasn't it? Yeah.
Man, y'all were rich.
Yes.
We did 199 a month.
Yeah.
Mona was born. Then I think it went to 220 because of the military.
Crazy.
Got a little bit of a raise when you had a kid.
I can remember when my budget was $10 a week.
Yeah. Well, and I can remember when my rent was $50 a month.
Joe started out with $740 a year with a wife and a baby.
Yeah.
Was it a year? No, a month, I guess.
A month? Yeah. A month? No, that's a lot of money a month.
Yeah. It was not very much.
Well, when the thing is, money is relative.
Yeah.
And money is relative everywhere. If you go someplace where the average income per capita is $3,000 a year, if you have $1,000, you're doing pretty well.
A thought just came to me. When your dad started working for General Dynamics, he made $1.33 an hour.
I thought I remembered something around that number. And so when people complain about the amount of money they make, but then sometimes in our heads we want to go, well, I only made blah, blah, blah. Well, it's relative, you know, but what does housing cost? What does food cost? Incidentally, anybody knows how food's just jumped lately?
Yes.
Like, and I can't afford to go to the grocery store anymore.
You always have to keep in mind, though, that can be taken away from you instantly.
Instantly.
The banks can fail or anything.
The banks can fail, which we know from in this country. Even on a temporary basis, the fire in Bastrop that took away the homes of so many of our friends. Now, they were, because we live in a land of plenty, because they had insurance, they were not permanently devastated. But for that period in time, there's nothing. And you've got to figure out how to work through on a daily basis. If you don't have God, how do you do that? How do you get through that? I don't understand. By this, I know that you are well pleased with me, because my enemy does not triumph over me. As for me, you uphold me in my integrity and set me before your face forever. We've seen that phrase before. Set me before your face. God's watching. He knows who we are. You know, what does he say about I knew you before you were formed, when you were formed in the womb? He knows us. He knows us individually. He knows the hairs on our head. And sometimes I think we say it teasingly, God's busy. He doesn't have time to worry about me. He does. Each and every one of us individually. You were reading from Matthew 6. And when I went through the divorce, I lived in Matthew 6. That's where I went every day, because it says, don't worry. Be all right. I'm going to take care of you. You have responsibilities, but I'm going to take care of you.
But when you know that very hair of your head is numbered,
right?
He knows you pretty well.
He does. He does.
And that scares me sometimes.
And it should.
And I think that verse also speaks to when we have God, that's how our enemy, we don't allow our enemies to triumph over us, because we do have God.
Right. We do our part.
Right.
Yeah. We do our part. But holding on to your integrity is not always easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think sometimes we read about Job and think, well, he was strong and that was easy for him. And I don't think if you read it, you see anything that makes you think it was easy for Job. Because he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause. Can you not feel Job's frustration, questioning, all these things? But he never voiced any of that. He was firm in his conviction that God's in control and it's going to be all right.
I think his faith sustains us to just see how he could do.
Yeah.
And we have nothing in comparison to that.
And of course, when I read that, all his children were killed. Now, as a mother, I don't know, you put one foot in front of the other after that. Not to mention all the other things that happened to him. But he had faith in God. He said, this is the way it is. This God is still in control. He's still watching out for me. He didn't say, he's deserted me. Because he could have said, God's in control. I don't know why he's left me. He never said that. His wife helped meet that she was not. Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Just curse God and die. Wow. That's so wrong on so many levels. Just, you know, she impugns his integrity. Says that's not worth it. She says, curse God. That's a scary thing. And then just die. Just be gone. I don't want to have to deal with you any longer. I don't want to head to that. I hope so too. But some of his was on her children.
It's true.
The bloodthirsty hate the blameless, which means that if you're upright, what happens? People come after you. I was watching Dr. Phil the other day. And there was a young woman on there, probably 21, 22. And she does not use bad language. She does not. Now, I think some of her words, I didn't understand why she thought they were bad. They were not words that I had ever heard used in any kind of a bad connotation. And neither had Phil. And he was, okay, I don't understand that one. But he said, I absolutely respect and support your decision to live your life that way. He said, I can tell it's a conviction. He said, I just want to understand some of these others. But she brought a friend with her. I use that term very loosely. And the friend's goal was to get her to use bad language. Just once in a while, just so I know you're human. And the young lady said, this is who I am. And if I think a word has a bad connotation, I'm not going to use it. Even if someone else doesn't see that. You have to leave us. Thanks for coming.
I hate to go right now.
That's all right. We'll see you this evening.
I'll go over the scriptures more carefully.
But the friend's goal was to sabotage her in this effort to maintain her integrity. And if any of you have spent time around teenagers, have a drink. Just one drink. Won't hurt you. Just have a drink. I remember one time saying to somebody, no, I don't drink. Really? Not water? Not milk? Well, he knew what I meant. It was an opportunity to make fun of me and try to make me feel uncomfortable in a group. Of course, my arrogance just said, well, that was a stupid thing to say, so it didn't bother me at all. But teenagers are particularly bad about wanting to pull their friends into whatever bad behavior they're doing. So we have to be careful and know that the bloodthirsty hate the blameless. Why do you think that is?
They don't want anything to look like they're doing something wrong.
It's their conscience. Their conscience, and by comparison, they look bad. So if I can bring you down to my level, I don't have to go up to yours.
Those are basement friends.
Yes, they are. They're basement friends. But God says, in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, and incorruptibility. In all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works. I think this is one we should teach to our children more regularly. That it does matter. It does matter in the small things. It does matter if you're not scrupulously honest. It does matter if you're not respectful of God and His authority. And because kids want to say that's a small thing. But it's not, because it's a pattern of good works. And then, of course, don't be deceived. And I always quote the King James, evil companions corrupt good morals. But hanging out with people you shouldn't hang out with is going to be bad news. And that is true for adults. I remember as a young adult thinking, wow, it's finally going to be easier. It's going to be a little easier. People aren't trying to get you to go to the parties you shouldn't go to and all that. Not true. Randy worked for big eight accounting firms. And one of the first, two things right away, his boss wanted us to belong to that big church Christ out there where you meet a lot of contacts. Well, no, we're not going to go there. And I need you to come to these cocktail parties. We don't drink. Well, I need you to come anyway. Just pretend. No. So, as an adult, it didn't get particularly easier. The challenges changed. And I do think it gets easier as we grow and as we age, but I don't think it's because the world is any less after us and Satan's any less after us. We've just had more practice at avoiding those things.
Well, when as a married couple at the time, you had each other, whereas
right.
a teenager a lot of time feels alone.
Very alone, yeah. So, you know, there's help and there's support, but you know, that boss really, he said, you need to go to that big church. That's where you're going to make contacts. And didn't go over well when we said, nope, not going to do that.
I remember the first time I had to tell, I think Randy was in third grade, and there was this little boy who was just trouble. But he wanted to be Brantley's friend. And I had to teach Brantley the lesson. I said, you may be friendly to him.
Right.
You may not be his friend.
Right.
And
that
was
a big difference.
That was a big lesson.
It is when you're 9 years old.
Yeah. And now, especially when you don't want your child to think, oh, you're just a mean person.
Right.
You want your
child to learn to be friendly to everyone and be the kind of person they should be, but you've got to help them shield themselves from the evil companions. So, what happens when our integrity is tested?
Well, the Lord will judge us and test us. I know, my God, that you test the heart, and you have pleasure in my uprightness. As for me, in the uprightness of my heart, I willingly offered all these things. It's my choice to be upright. Yes, Satan is after us, but we always have the choice. We can always choose. Oh, the Lord shall judge his people. Judge me, O Lord, according to my righteousness and according to my integrity within me. And that is, of course, true. I'm glad we're able to add, and with your grace, so that I am not judged just on my righteousness. But the psalmist was saying, I try to be righteous. I respect you. I love you. I'm going to do your commandments. And please judge me according to that, to the fact that I am striving for that goal. God hates the lack of integrity. You know, if you start reading through the list of things God hates, there's not a whole lot of them, but I think we ignore some of them. These are the things you'll do. Speak to each man the truth, to his neighbor. Give judgment in your gates for truth, justice, and peace. Let none of you think evil in your heart against your neighbor. Don't love a false oath. Do not love a false oath. And for all these things that I hate. And all of these things are what we've been talking about. Being honest, being upright, being forthright. And God says, I hate it when you don't do these things. I hate it when you give a false oath. I hate it when you don't give judgment for truth, justice, and the American way, no peace. And, of course, the choice is always ours. So you come to the end of the day, and the questions that you have to answer are you upright and honest? Are you a person of integrity? Because only you and God know that one for sure. Because it's easy to put on a cloak of integrity. We've just been through some elections where lots of people were cloaking lots of issues.
I saw a statement once that said, integrity is who you are when no one's looking.
Absolutely. It's who you are. It's who you are within you. And how does our integrity show in our life? And I want to talk about that for a minute. What are some things we do that show others that we are people of integrity? Go to church.
Mm-hmm. Practice what you preach.
Practice what you preach, even when it's hard. How about people who can say, well, I know I can trust Glenda because whatever she says is the truth. It's always the truth. Isn't that something that everyone should be able to say about us as Christians? That they never have to worry if we've told them something, it's the truth. And we're not going to tell them things they don't need to hear. We're going to stem the flow of gossip. What are some other ways we show integrity, Carol?
Honesty.
Honesty. Absolute honesty.
And whatever the dealing is, financial or whatever.
And we've talked a lot about that, about the people that give you too much change and all the little, those are teaching moments. Those are ways to say to people in the world, I'm a Christian and I won't do that. I won't take advantage of that. And there are always people who say, well, it's a big corporation, they don't care. A, they do care, and B, there's a bookkeeper somewhere pulling their hair out trying to make it fit.
And it's not about them.
And it's not about
what
them.
You're doing.
It's about us. So,
and for our children and grandchildren who are with us,
yes,
in these particular instances,
right,
or whatever, you know, saying they're 12 or whatever.
Right.
I don't go to movies anymore.
Right. Yeah,
saying 12. They're 12 to, yeah, get in at the child's rate at the movie or whatever.
Yeah.
That's just teaching them.
And, you know, with the little boys, we're to the point where a lot of things are free when you're under two. And people will say, just in conversation, how old are you? Well, I actually want the kids to answer because I want them to say, oh, I'm three now. Because I want them to understand, because we talk about, well, if you were only a baby, if you were only two, we wouldn't do so-and-so. So I agree with you. Just tell them you're 10. They'll believe it. I don't like that stuff. And the thing about bringing food into the movies, we've talked about that. I don't think that's right because you've made an agreement with these people. You've bought a ticket, and their agreement is you don't bring food in. So you don't bring food in. Uh-oh, Carol's hiding her face.
How many times have you bought the candy in your purse instead of getting popcorn and Coke and
Well, people do that, but I think it's wrong because you've made a contract. They've said to come to our movie where we own it and we distribute the films. You've agreed not to bring any outside food in because we're going to make our real money on the food rather than this film.
Have they posted that?
They say no food or drinks. Well, it says no food or drinks. I'm saying you've made a contract with God. It says no food or drinks, and you're saying, okay, I'm going to buy a ticket to go here. That's their rule. I'm going to abide by their rule. Now, y'all may disagree with me, but I think it's wrong to do that. I think you're violating a contract that you've made by purchasing their service.
I just think you've struck a nerve.
Tracy's laughing at me back there.
Well, before you go that first time,
it's doing right when it's not easy.
Yeah. Or when it's just easier to do wrong. Just easier.
Or you think it's accepted. Oh, that's an accepted rule breaking.
Everybody does that.
Yeah.
And saying it's a small, that's just a small thing.
Yeah. But having been a small business owner,
yeah,
I can tell you that those kinds of things hurt, don't they,
yes,
Rita?
They do.
For people who, okay, let's take it down to even more minuscule one that you can help. Somebody goes into a restaurant and they take 15 packages of ketchup home.
Right. Yes.
It's very expensive.
And they do it all.
Oh, they do it all the time. I have a little social experiment that I do. If I'm at a drive-thru, I'll tell them, may I have one packet of salt? And I say one. I deliberately say it. It's a handful of them. Yeah. So the employees give it away, but I guarantee you the owner's wishing they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Certainly the owner wants them to have as much as they need, but it is not the obligation of Chicken Express to pay your ketchup bill for the next month. It is not acceptable to deliberately, now I'm not saying that you don't wind up with more than you need, but to deliberately decide, I'm going to take all that home, I'm squeezing it in my ketchup bottle.
Chick-fil-A stopped sending theirs out.
Yeah, they will do that. Yeah.
And more people.
Convenience stores, when you buy coffee, where all that creamer's sitting there, and
people.
I mean, they just do it.
Now, I did take umbrage at the ones that had a sign that said, please only use a certain amount of creamers in my coffee that I'm buying. I like a lot of cream. And I'm going to put a whole lot in. But I'm buying the coffee.
Yeah.
And I understand that that seems like a small thing, but I guarantee you that that owner of that small business is having to buy ketchup four times more often than you would have to.
It's part of their profit.
It is.
And then they raise bills to take care of that.
Right.
And then we're paying more.
Right. Yes. For everybody taking the ketchup home.
Yes.
And buying a bottle of
ketchup home.
Yeah. Funny that half the time, those the kids will say, just do ask, we'll buy you one. And say no.
And it's anyway.
Yes. It's it's just
or at the taco place, do you want hot sauce? Sure. And they give me 15 packages. I've only got two tacos. You know, how many of those can I use on two tacos?
Yeah. Right. But those are not the owners.
They are not the owners. They are not the owners, and they're not the ones trying to manage the bills.
We don't buy that much, but I know when my husband comes home with us something to eat, in the sack will be a
bunch
of stuff.
Unless you
and I don't like to throw it out.
No, I would not. I would not want to throw it out. But what I'm saying is, even when you try to tell them, I need one packet of salt, please.
Yes.
It's five. Yeah. And sometimes if I see them do it, I say, no, I just want one. Take those. Oh, which really irritates them, but that's okay. I don't care.
But it's the same thing at jobs. They can supplies work.
You know, in the job at Region 10, where we traveled a lot and we did presentations a lot, it was easy to wind up with office things in the car because, you know, you're going out to counties and doing trainings. And I always tried to be meticulous in making sure that I got all that stuff back. But when I left there, I wrote out a check to the general fund just because I knew that over the course of 7 years, some things had made their way to my house that really shouldn't have, not because I took them, but because that's how it happened. I probably didn't have to do that. They didn't ask me for it. But I felt better doing it. It just made me feel like I had evened the books, and it's one of those unknown sins. I certainly would not want something like that to stop my entrance into heaven. And the secretary said, you don't have to, nobody does that. And I said, you know what, just put it in that petty cash fund and I'll feel better.
You are your own trustee.
You are your own trustee. Anything else we need to talk about?